Stephen, how are you?
I'm good, Tony. How are you?
I'm doing very well. In a decision, the courts have, the Supreme Court decided that automakers can be sued over safety equipment. What's your take on that?
Well, so the case is called Williamson versus Mazda Motor Company. It was decided Wednesday. And I think the real issue here is that in 2000, the Supreme Court, in another case called Geyer, had said that private individuals could not bring a state tort suit, a negligence claim arising out of a car accident, because car manufacturers had not installed airbags in certain models of cars. Here, the fight wasn't over airbags. Here, the fight was over seatbelts. And there's a federal regulation that had given automakers the choice between installing just plain old lap belts and lap and shoulder belts for the inside interior seats in a minivan. And what basically happened in this case is these plaintiffs, whose daughter was killed in a car accident, brought a state tort suit basically saying that Mazda had committed negligence by only putting in a lap belt, by not putting in a lap and shoulder belt. And the Supreme Court said that suit can go forward. It's not preempted by the federal law.
Stephen, what's interesting about this case is that the justices took the view that the lawsuits filed by the injured persons can lead to safer products.
Indeed, and that, I mean, I think we see that in a lot of contexts where oftentimes state tort suits, where, you know, those who are harmed by defective medical devices or drugs or other consumer products, that actually it's those tort suits as much as, if not more than, state legislative policy or Congress that actually effects change on the part of industry. And I think what the justices might be responding to in this case is the notion that, you know, the federal government has not been that aggressive on the regulatory frontier, and so perhaps it's appropriate to leave more room for state tort law, for state contract law to do some of the work in these cases.
I would imagine that Toyota is readying their attorneys as they've had some more recalls, and as you know, they've had some questions about the gas pedal sticking in many of their vehicles.
No doubt. I think, you know, the important thing there, and I don't know all the sort of nitty-gritty, but the important thing in the Toyota cases, I think, is going to be what is the relationship between the federal regulations, these so-called federal motor vehicle safety standards, and state tort law. In both the 2000 case and in the Williamson decision from Wednesday, all the attention was on the scope of a particular federal motor vehicle safety standard. You know, I'm not sure, I actually kind of doubt that there is a federal motor vehicle safety standard that would preempt state tort law that goes to, you know, sticking accelerator pedals, design defects that make it impossible to sort of get to the brake pedal, et cetera. So, you know, I think it's very possible that we're going to see a lot more discussion of the relationship between state tort law and the claims that we might see in the Toyota cases in the weeks and months to come.
The Supreme Court ruled that the parents of a child who suffered seizures after routine vaccination cannot sue the drug maker. Have you seen that, Stephen?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. So this is, you know, both of these cases came out this week, and I think, you know, we're seeing that the Supreme Court has spent a lot of time in the last couple of years sorting out which kinds of suits can go forward at the state level and which kinds cannot. You know, so the seatbelt case is at first blush rather similar to the vaccination case. The difference is, you know, just how clear federal policy was on what kind of choices individual consumers and drug manufacturers had. In the vaccination case, the court concluded that, you know, the federal regulation had left less room for a kind of state tort suit. And that's really what we've seen in these cases, the court sort of going back and forth as it looks at the different relationship between federal and state law.
Stephen, let's say I had a case and I hired you to go to the Supreme Court to argue this case. On average, what would it cost me to do that?
It's not cheap. I mean, I think, you know, including the fees, the cost of briefs, the cost of serving the briefs, you know, I think even if you weren't paying the lawyer for labor, the mere cost of actually perfecting the appeal would be about $3,000, $4,000. And then if you start factoring in how much it actually costs to get a lawyer to do it, you know, we're talking about really a pretty piece of change.
All right, 20 grand?
at least.
go ahead. Were you going
to
say something?
I was going to say, suffice it to say, there are a whole lot of lawyers in Washington who make their calling on exactly that kind of practice. Mm-hmm.
And before I let you go, final question. I saw an article in USA Today, and it talked about Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, who he is a quiet guy when hearing cases. He seldom speaks during hour-long oral argument sessions, and he's quoted as saying, "I prefer to listen and think the case through more quietly." Any take on that?
Well, I mean, you know, this is a story that the media, I think, really loves about Justice Thomas, and I've never sort of, you know, gotten that much out of it. I mean, it's been over 5 years since he asked a question at oral argument. You know, but the reality is that what you usually hear and what experts will usually tell you is that you can never really win a case at oral argument in the Supreme Court. You can only lose it. So, you know, I think this is not where I would focus attention and criticism on Justice Thomas. I think, you know, he's an active justice when it comes to his role in writing opinions. He writes lots of concurrences and dissents. You know, I think no one can question his productivity. If he'd rather keep his mouth shut and listen, you know, who can blame him?
Stephen Vladeck is professor at law at American University's Washington College of Law. Stephen, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Tony.
Enjoy your weekend.
You too.